The following is paid for by the Coalition for a Better Hollywood. For decades, Big Movie has had Hollywood studios in their back pocket. They spend millions to get you to spend billions on movies that are nothing more than sequels, reboots, remakes, reimaginings, Oscar cliche and January releases. Big movie lobbyists have all but ensured original film ideas are ignored, forgotten, or maybe not even real. Are they feature films? Are they quality flicks? Are they real motion pictures? Your soon-to-be, if not already favorite movie podcast stands with the little movies. Help put an end to Big Movie's cinematic censorship and listen to the pop-up film cast every Tuesday wherever honest hard-working podcasts can be found. We are the Pop-Up Film Cast, a proud member of the Podfix Network, and we support this message.
Austin is a weirdo.
Austin is a weirdo.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's not even all of it.
Austin is a weirdo. It's a weirdo.
This could be our new intro.
I know.
Austin is a weirdo. It's a weirdo. It's a weirdo.
Anyway.
Yeah. Now that that happened.
Insults from the future. Future. Future.
Hello, welcome to The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I am Phil Rude. I'm the dad.
And I'm Austin Rude, the son. Every week we watch a movie and then we talk about it. Or in this week's case, we watch a season of a show.
Of a TV show.
Over right. A long, long period of time because we were dragging our feet.
Yeah, we weren't. We're not dragging our feet. We're just spacing these episodes out. I'm not...
I was dragging my feet. I was procrastinating this season.
I don't want to do four Korra episodes in a row.
Yeah, that would be tedious.
I think we may not do the next two until till our season two. Till, you know, right. I like to space these out a little bit.
That's fine.
Partly because I don't enjoy this very much. but also, like, yeah, I don't think for people who don't want to sit down and watch Korra, to have a 4-week block of something that they aren't going to watch along with us, I think is sort of
right.
Jarring for people. So,
and if someone wants to watch them, they can.
Wants to watch, you're here. When we get done with them, you can go back and marathon them all if you're a big... Korra head. I don't
Korra
know.
Korra head,
what
yeah.
What do they call the fans of I almost called it Book of Korra, Legend of Korra, The Last Airbender, any
good
other...
Good people. I really, I don't know.
They don't have any names like the Deadheads or Paraheads.
I mean, they're
like
Avatar
that.
Fans.
Yeah. What do they call them?
Avatar fans.
Bendheads?
Benders.
Bendades.
Bendades.
Before we get into Korra, what have you been putting in your brain? You still off of school?
Yeah, this is my last week of
you've
break.
You've been getting some good ceramics work done and things mm-hmm. like that, but you've also been watching some stuff, right?
Yeah, we just got HBO Max, and that has opened a whole new world of possibilities.
There's a lot on there, yeah.
There is. Infinity Train. I think that was the main thing I binged. Because it's like 10-minute episodes.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's just kind of like you can put it on whenever.
Speaking of which, R.I.P. Quibi.
Right. The thing that no one saw coming. Quibi is out of business.
Quibi didn't quite last long enough to watch an entire episode of their programming.
They lasted a whole Quibi.
Yeah.
And try to make that a verb.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. Okay, so Infinity Train, that's been your big one.
Yeah, and there's also this British ceramics show called The Great Pottery Throwdown. It's like a cooking show, but with ceramics, and I thought it was...
Wait, do they eat the ceramics when they're done?
That's one of the tests. No.
Wow. Wow. That is some hardcore.
It's dedication to the art form. Oh, yeah. Cool. What about you?
Lovecraft Country. I'm still on that.
Right.
On HBO. I've just been really trying to catch up on some movies that I've missed. I watched Ford versus Ferrari. I watched just some stuff that's been on TV. We watched Carrie last night, the remake of Stephen King's Carrie.
Right, the newer one?
The newer one, yeah. I don't know, just some random stuff here and there. And then this weekend I started rewatching Breaking Bad again. Just because I've kind of, that's sort of become my comfort food. It's something I've watched the entirety of that show probably 5 or 6 times, and I just like to touch base with it here and there. And I think with all the stresses of this year, it's almost like this touchstone of normality for me, like this thing that is very familiar to me that I love, and I just can turn it on and kind of get lost in this world again.
That is so bizarre to me, because my idea of like a comfort food, like a comfort TV show, is like something upbeat.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's just such a downer, Breaking Bad. It's a great show, but I can't binge it.
I get it. I think there's kind of two camps about Breaking Bad, and I think it is about how people process something that is kind of a downer.
Heavy.
Kind of heavy, right. There are some heavy things that I don't enjoy, that I don't, you know, I just watched a movie called Tigers Are Not Afraid. It is a Mexican supernatural thriller kind of movie. I watched it for the Movie Go Round podcast I was a guest on.
All right.
And that is a really, really good movie that I never want to watch again. It's I call that the boys don't cry effect. Here's a great movie. It's very powerful. It's very makes you think about a lot of things, but you feel so bad at the end of it that you just are like, I'm glad I watched that. Now get it away from me. But
great job. Goodbye.
But right. But there are some things that I think fall into a very specific pocket for me where I really do enjoy something that is a little down. I love Breaking Bad. I love Mad Men. I like country music. I like blues music. I like kind of sad or melancholy kind of things.
I see the appeal of it.
In the same way we talked about things that are stressful, like movies that are stressful, like Uncut Gems or J.K. Simmons, Drumming.
Oh,
Whiplash.
Neither of us could think
again,
of it.
Again, another movie that is almost comfort food to me, but some people that I know are like, that's a great movie. I cannot watch it. It's too stressful. I love it. I will just turn that movie on. It's great music. It's great storytelling. I love the stress of it because it's not mine. And right. And there's just something about something very, I don't know where the boundaries of that are, but there is a comfort food kind of quality.
I like to get my melancholy like feels out through music. I'll listen to
music's
sad
a big
music.
One. Yeah.
But I like positive upbeat shows.
There's a song that I think of it because I play it fairly often. It's a Simon and Garfunkel song called The Only Living Boy in New York, And it's this very, very sad, melancholy song, and I just cannot listen to it enough.
Even the title sounds sad.
It is, right. It is kind of, it's a song Paul Simon wrote when he knew the end of Simon and Garfunkel was coming up, and he was sort of starting to feel abandoned by Art Garfunkel, even though arguably I think Paul Simon is the one who pulled the trigger on, you know, whatever.
It's a lot of history there.
There is a lot of, like, weird, complicated things with Simon and Garfunkel, and it is him writing that song about Art Garfunkel going to pursue acting, and him being left and feeling like the only living boy in New York, and how sad that is, and...
Interesting.
This is a big rabbit hole that has nothing to do with Cora.
Fill up time not talking about Cora.
Which shows you how much I don't want to talk about Cora. Anyway, Only
Watch
Living Boy in New York.
Watch this whole episode not be about Cora.
It's great. That's what I've been up to. A lot of sad stuff that makes me feel good.
All right. I mean, it's needed sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. But yeah, this week we watched Season 2, Book 2.
Book
right?
2,
Book
yeah.
Book 2.
Same thing,
it
really.
It is a season. Series, if you're in the UK.
Ooh.
That's right, I'm international. Legend of Korra. And this season focuses on Avatar Korra coming to terms with her role as the liaison between humans and the mystical spirit world. It deals with a civil war between the tribes of the Water Nation and Korra's uncle, Unalaq, attempting to free the dark spirit Vatu and become sort of a dark avatar. It is the invention of the Sith, if we really want to line it up to an analog that we're all a little bit more familiar with.
I feel like it's the how Marvel has the supervillains who foil the hero. It's the same kind of...
We
have
right.
a dark avatar.
It is, but it's not... Man, it
done
is,
well? Yes.
Yes.
It's not.
Let's can we start there?
Yeah, I want to say before anything, I think everyone agrees that this season is bad. Like the internet is full of people criticizing this season of this season
of Freudian. Oh man.
Oh boy. I've been watching too much this week. Legend of Korra. Just because it's not done well.
Okay.
But I will say...
I'm not interested in what the internet's saying. I have my own thoughts about this.
Right.
I get it. Popular opinion doesn't like this... This... season. Book.
Right. Whatever.
Yeah. But, like, that has nothing... I went in knowing that that was a popular opinion. And I did enjoy this more than season one. Honestly, like,
really,
season one is not good. It's a bad origin story, and this is a bad this is also a bad origin story, but no pro bending.
No so, pro bending. That's a pro.
I
will say I want to focus more on the positives because I feel like the conversation.
Well, I'll just let you talk by yourself then. No.
Okay. We will talk about the negatives. We will talk about why this sucks. But I want to highlight some of the good parts of this, because I think there are, and they're often overlooked, because they were done bad. But there are still some good concepts
in this season. I think there... When I was enjoying this most was somewhere in the middle of it, when there were a lot of concepts flying around where I was kind of excited about the potential of some of the things they were doing.
Right.
And then by the time they got to the end of the season, it just was so poorly executed or brought home in the worst way to where it was like, oh, you had all this potential and you squandered it on a dumb fist fight at the end.
Right.
Like, it just, none of it mattered.
I feel no emotion in the last couple episodes of this.
Right, yeah. I was completely bored and just couldn't wait to be done with it, honestly.
Right.
You mentioned the Marvel villain sort of analog.
Right.
What I think about Marvel villains, a lot of times, the ones that are done well, is that they are trying to, from their point of view, they're doing maybe the right thing sometimes. Sometimes they were trying to do the right thing, and somebody did them wrong, and it sort of twisted their perspective. They never are like, I'm evil, and I'm just going to be evil. That is what this is. This right. guy is like, I'm going to become the dark avatar because I'm evil. And I just want to do evil things. And it's just like, nobody says that. Nobody thinks that they're the evil one. That is the dumbest, most lamest, most basic bitch thing you can do with your bad guy. Is to go, I acknowledge that I'm evil. And so, therefore, I will do evil things. And I will try to make the world evil like me. It's so dumb.
You really have that Unalaq voice down. I think it's worse than that, though, because they still want to try to be nuanced with this. They have the whole thing where he wants to, like, his whole thing as the Dark Avatar is to bridge the spirit and the living world. And then in the end, they're
which is dumb, by the way.
Right, okay. But in the end, they decide, okay, yes, that was right. But like...
But it wasn't! It's still dumb!
It's done so badly.
It's not done badly, it's dumb!
Why is it dumb?
Because the spirit world... Yes, I support spiritual apartheid. The spirit world... The spirits should stay in the spirit world. It's their dimension. It's what it was built for. It is... The whole reason it exists is this is where the spirits go, and they have their own world, and they're above humans now. Like, this idea of, like, you transcend into becoming a spirit. Like, why would you want to drag them? What are they going to do in the land of the living? None of it matters.
Well, I see it as, like, before the Avatar, they had the spirits and the humans living together in two realms. They were mixed. And then, because there was so much fighting, they segregated them. They divided them up into the two separate realms. And now Korra is being like, hey, that's wrong. And we're going to undo
okay,
that.
Okay, Korra's the civil rights leader that, you know, in everything. She's the one who's bridging the... Korra is a Mary Sue. I'm just going to say it. Korra is the biggest Mary Sue. In two seasons, she has been the perfect... She's so flawed. She's so spoiled. She's so entitled. And she's so irrational. But they just give her every power and every fixable thing. And I don't like the character.
She's the Avatar. Of course she gets all the power.
Aang didn't have all the power. Aang had to learn about being the Avatar. Aang had to go through what... What made...
Aang and Korra are opposites. You can't like Aang and not like Korra.
Yes, you can if they're opposites. That's exactly what you...
they're opposites in personality, but they fulfill the same role.
I know, but becoming the Avatar shouldn't just be about being an all-powerful thing. How boring is that? It should be
but
about...
But she has to learn how to control that responsibility.
She's not learning anything. She
is. Oh, it's poorly... Man. This is why I don't like this season, is because they have these concepts where she is learning... Where she is learning what her role is and how to be spiritual, but they overshadow it with this big, stupid plot. And then they have all of these characters doing other things, and they spend more time on Bolin being a movie star.
God, that's so... dumb.
I know.
Okay, but granted, he was funnier this season being the movie star than he was in all of his comic relief attempts in season one.
I'll give that. Yeah.
I found him more entertaining than just being the dopey guy in season one. The Sokka wannabe of book one.
He came into his own, but they didn't do anything with him.
No, they didn't.
They really didn't do anything with any of the characters.
They didn't exactly
the only...
What this all came down to for me was that it was the most pointless, nothing season. There's an entire civil war that I didn't care anything about. If you ask me right now who the right side of the civil war was in this... I know in real life, in this, I couldn't tell you because I did not care at all about the Water Tribe Civil War. It was the most pointless, giant plot point that had nothing to do with anything that was really going on.
Right. There was no tension to it.
No.
The only characters that had any sort of growth are Tenzin, Jinora, and Korra. Those are the only three.
I agree with you 100% because they were the best part of this entire season for me. Tenzin and his siblings and his children and Jinora.
Right. That
Jinora also
family.
In Mad Men.
Really?
I can't remember the actress's name. She plays Sally Draper, Don's daughter. She's also better known probably to a lot of people as Sabrina in the new Sabrina, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Oh my gosh, series. She is.
That's her, yeah.
That's crazy.
I always think of her as Sally Draper. I'm going to look up her name because it was like Mad Men cast these kids to be Don Draper's kids. I don't know that this is exactly how it went, but they were just kids to represent Don Draper's family. Rabbit hole here, by the way.
Right.
And I think they just realized a couple seasons in how lucky they got with her because she is amazing.
She's a good actress.
She's a really good actress. And playing Sally Draper, they actually gave that character a lot to do and a lot of weight to juggle. And she does it just so incredibly well.
I swear that same thing happened with Legend of Korra because you said in the first season that like all of Tenzin's kids, they were like interchangeable. And that's
absolutely
true.
Absolutely, right.
But in this season, she really has a character arc and she grows and that carries on throughout the rest of the show. And it's really the saving grace of this season, I would say. When she is imprisoned in the spirit world, that is the only time I feel anything in this season.
It's true.
I am like scared for her. Tenzin's reaction gets me to cry every time.
Well, there's that and there's the whole pivot point of Tenzin is like the spiritual one. And he can't go into the spirit world. And his daughter can. And that gives him a lot to chew on where
he's jealous of her.
He's jealous of her. He's kind of, he feels like he's failing. And it just, everything, he takes it so personally. And he still loves his daughter. He's not mad at his daughter. Mm-hmm. But he's afraid for her. All of these things. It really is like this very complicated, Tenzin's family dynamics with his siblings, everything.
Right.
They're jealous. They're like, oh, dad spent all this time with you. You guys went off together. I'm like, all that was so good. And I'm like, why can't you do this with the rest of, why can't you build this into Korra's arc? Why can't you build this into any other character? Like, the main character of the show I should care about as much as I do, Tenzin and his relationship with his father, which is just talked about. We don't see flashbacks to that.
Right,
anything.
Yeah.
It's just really, really well done.
The
actress is, by the way, her name is Kiernan Shipka, and she is, she's amazing. She's currently 20 years old. So that means when this was on, she was 12 to 14.
Right, yeah. Hats off to her.
Yeah, when she started playing Sally Draper, she was six or seven years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and really has grown into being a great actress. She's also on an episode of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Really?
Where she plays the other Kimmy, the stepsister to...
Oh,
Kim.
yeah.
And, Kimmy and Kimi or something like that. But yeah, it's...
She has a career ahead of her.
Yeah, she's really great. And as soon as I recognized her voice, I was like, oh my God, I never really... I looked it up. I'm like, that damn sure is her. And yeah, she's really solid in everything around her. I feel like was the most compelling part of this season for me.
It was. Okay, I want to go back to Korra because I'm still not over the fact that you didn't like her character arc in this, which is really that she is the Avatar, and she's been told she's great, and she has all this power, but she doesn't know how to use it. She doesn't know how to be a bridge between the spirit world and the human world. She doesn't know how to talk to her past avatars, and she really doesn't know what she's doing. She's just coasting off of this existing legacy of being the Avatar. Right. And all of that is destroyed when the Avatar cycle is broken. And this upsets a lot of people. I think it's part of the reason this season is so hated on. I really think, like, half of the fans don't even care that this is a poorly written season. They're just like, but Aang's ghost is gone, so how can I like the show? But I think it's a great character moment because they ripped away that legacy from her. And they had this whole moment where she had to look at herself and rely on herself to save the day.
Right. Here's my problem with that, and it's the same problem I had when she lost her bending in season one. It's all just instantly fixed because they just go, well, it's within you the entire time. And she goes, oh, okay. And then she just is there. She never works for anything. She never suffers for anything. She never has to really find her way back. She never has to walk a path. She always just goes, oh, it's not about the bending. It's not about your being severed from the spirit world. And this season, it's like, it's not about all the previous avatars. It's about you. And she goes, oh, you're right. Boom, avatar state. She's never, look, the whole thing of season one was Aang learning to control the avatar state. I don't like the avatar state in general, but Avatar did it better because when they did show it, it showed that Aang was out of control. There was a penalty to pay for going in the avatar state.
Right.
Korra just goes to the avatar state and she's like, I got this, bitches. And that's it. Korra never, she does, this is the problem with where I compare her to Aang. The entirety of Avatar was about Aang becoming the Avatar. It was about him learning. Well, this is supposed to be about her learning, but she doesn't learn anything. It just happens to
look,
her.
Look, this is why they're foils. Aang is someone who never wanted to be the Avatar, learning how to be the Avatar. This is Korra, who always wanted to be the Avatar. She is like a gifted kid. She has everything. She's always been told she's smart, but she doesn't know how to implement it. She doesn't know how to live in the real world. She has to learn how to be Korra.
But she's not learning any of it. She's just...
It's just badly done.
That's my problem with it. It's badly done because she doesn't do anything. It just happens to her. This is the same... The criticism, I'm going to do another Star Wars comparison.
Okay.
The criticism that goes against Rey, and I like Rey because Rey has a cool relationship with Kylo Ren. The dynamics of that.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of validity when people say Rey is a Mary Sue because Rey doesn't work for anything either. Rey just has the Force. Rey gets, what, maybe 1.5 actual lessons from Luke Skywalker, and then all of a sudden is just fluent in everything Jedi. She didn't work this path towards being a Jedi. She just was because the script wanted her to be. We don't really see her go. So people go, oh, Rey's a Mary Sue. And I think the biggest write-off to that is everyone goes, you just don't like her because she's a girl. And really, like, the idea of Rey being a Mary Sue is very valid. It has nothing to do with her being a girl.
Well, the term Mary Sue is essentially sexist. I'm not accusing you of sexism, but, like, the thing is, oh, she's a woman, oh, she's overpowered, she's a Mary Sue. And it's never accused towards men.
I don't know about that. I think, like, there's male Mary Sues as well.
The thing with both Rey and with Korra isn't that their story isn't about learning how to... They aren't training. They aren't learning how to gain power. They already have the power. They have to learn how to use it, and they have an internal struggle. No, it's not external.
But they're not showing any of the internal struggle. That's my problem with it. Yes, I understand that they just are, like, blessed with this power. That's not my issue with it. It's just that when they need to be able to control it, they go, oh, no, you don't know enough to control it yet. And they go, you know what? You're right. And then two scenes later, they go, you know what? Admitting that I didn't know how to control it just gave me the power to control it, like, or whatever it is.
That's all storytelling is. You hit your lowest point, and then you go up.
You
That's
start
what happens.
To go up. It's not instantaneous. This is my problem, is they don't show any of the struggle. And by the way, Mary Sue is not coined as a sexist term. If that's what it's become, it's because that's what the internet has turned it into, on both sides of that coin. Mary Sue was there to frame the idea of someone making a character after themselves and just giving it every cool power that they wanted it to.
Okay.
And that's it wasn't necessarily a bad term either. It was just and I don't think being a Mary Sue is bad either, but if you're not going to write good stories around that, like, yeah, model a character after yourself. Of course, we all do that. Model a character after yourself. Give it all the cool powers that you want it to have. This is essentially like a Superman problem. I wouldn't say Superman was a Mary Sue. Superman was invented by Jewish immigrants who were fleeing Europe. Because it was becoming a terrible place for Jewish immigrants, and they were seeking asylum in the United States. They created Superman, who was essentially the same thing. But Superman could just do all the cool shit that he wanted to. And there was never any struggle with Superman. That's why I never, like, a lot of people don't connect with Superman, myself included.
It has to be written
well. He's too overpowered, and he doesn't have enough struggle. If your character doesn't have enough struggle, you're going to lose me.
I don't understand, though, because Kara struggled this whole season.
Kara whined a lot this season, but when it came down to her actually needing her problem solved, whether she had gotten to that point or not, she just all of a sudden could solve her problem. She all of a sudden, she got her ass kicked by her uncle at the end. And then all of a sudden, she just became, and I hate this ending, she just became a giant spirit monster.
Okay, yes. The Mecha
it became,
giants,
It
yes.
became a punching fight. This was all supposed to be about spirituality and Kara becoming spiritual. And all that ended up meaning to her was that she could summon a giant ghost at the end of it. Not she became more in touch with the spirit world. I mean, she became a giant spirit ghost that could punch somebody harder than she could get punched. It was a lame ending.
I agree that the fight is a bad ending, but I don't agree that there was no struggle. There was a struggle. There was a buildup.
They tried to write a struggle. I will give you that they tried. It just, you know, that's another thing. She's super toxic and manipulative, too. Oh, I don't remember.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like, come on. If that's a guy, that's super problematic.
All of the relationship stuff in this show is just awful.
Kara, you've been canceled.
Okay.
Seriously, Kara did get canceled. It took two more seasons.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to say, and I know you're going to say, oh, that doesn't matter because we're talking about this season, not that. But
I'm already going to say that if you're prefacing it with that.
She gets that struggle. They do it well. Okay,
they should have done it well now.
I know, but they were struggling with the thing was they had two seasons, 3 and 4. They go together. 1 and 2 don't go together. They don't line up because they were under the fear of cancellation. So
I get it.
They had to fix things fast. They had to tie it up.
It feels that way. It feels like they're landing every season on a place where they could end the series.
And that's why it sucks.
And I understand that. But no, that's not why it sucks. It sucks because they wrote it poorly. It has nothing to do with closing the loop. There are plenty of TV shows that land on a possible ending point for the series because they don't know if they're coming back or not. And you know what? They don't suck. There are ways to do it. I'm tired of you making excuses for this show. This show is not bad because of behind-the-scenes stuff where they didn't know they were getting picked up or not. This scene is bad because they, or this series is bad because they are executing things poorly. They are capable of doing it better because there are points in this, like I was talking about, Tenzin and his family. Great. All great stuff. They are capable of doing that. The spirit world in general, when she goes and she turns into a little girl and she meets Iroh and they go to the Mad Hatter's tea party.
Right.
Awesome. I love that whole I love the whole thing when she meets Iroh in the spirit world. That is so great. It's a great callback to Iroh, even though it's not Mako.
And it's not fan service.
It's not fan service at all. It's just part of the Avatar universe. And all of that, I think, is done super, super well. So when we talk about bad writing in this, it's not because they're bad writers. They're capable of doing this so much better, and they show it.
They're juggling too much is what it is.
I think that's a really... Can we pick up on that? Let's take a break.
Yeah.
I want to take a break because we're already going super far, and I want to get more coffee because, man, I'm burning this off real fast.
Jeez.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about juggling too much.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
Hi, this is Mouse.
I'm Weens.
We have the Mouse and Weens podcast. I'm the mom that lives in suburbia with three kids.
I'm Blalone.
She's the hot Hollywood
cat lady.
And we have a fun podcast where we talk about life, love, and...
loneliness.
Pubic hair. Come on.
I'm sorry.
We hope you come take a listen to us. We're on all the platforms, and we will see you soon.
I have PMS.
Hey, this is Kate. I'm a forensic psychologist and crisis clinician, and I collect stories. Everything from true crime to trauma to parenthood. There's a lot more in common between depression and sociopathy, or between serial killers and podcasters, than you might think. Are you sure you really want to know? This is Ignorance Was Bliss at iwbpodcast.com and IWB Podcast on social media.
And we're back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back from the spirit world. We missed you.
I turned into a giant glowing monster. I really did some dumb stuff.
Oh, I was going the Jenora route. I was going to say I was just tired of carrying your lifeless body around before you get revived.
Yeah.
Where were we? Juggling too much.
Right.
There's a lot going on this season.
Too much. Too many characters. Too many plots. Do you even remember Ahsoka? Or
no.
Asami? Exactly. See, she's not even in this.
Is that the...
Inventor's daughter.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, she is in...
She's like barely...
She's in this, I think, the proper amount. Where she's there sort of just to provide technology.
Right.
When Team Avatar needs it.
That's... Okay. Team Avatar is non-existent in this season. The first season, they build up... And then they finally get them together, like, in the last five episodes. And then they immediately split them up for this season so that they can go do their own plot-related things.
Right.
And it's just like, what happened? Where's the group dynamic?
Yeah, I can't say if that's a good or a bad thing. Because, I mean, that's sort of what ensemble adventure tends to do a lot. You take, like, Lord of the Rings. You have the Fellowship in the first movie or book. And then that splits apart in Two Towers.
Right.
You know, and then it doesn't come back around again till the end of Return of the King. Star Wars spends the entire second movie splitting the group up.
It just feels premature with this group.
I understand. Like, it does seem like... I don't think it's that it wasn't the full group as much as we just spend, like, too much time watching him be a cop and him be a movie star and, just sort of dancing around these things that don't matter to
right.
the rest of the the rest of the plot. You know what I mean? Like, and then there are too many plot threads. There's the Civil War plot. There's Tenzin on vacation, which for half of that, it's, again, this probably my favorite part of the series was Tenzin's stuff. Him teaching his son how to be a trainer.
Right, but then it's less
actually
fun.
Actually, I kind of enjoyed that. I was like, it was like you said, like season one, I didn't like the kids. They were bad comic relief. But this season, I think,
right,
I really enjoyed those parts a lot more.
Tenzin is the saving grace of this season.
Kind of, yeah. He has been of the show so far, I right. think.
It's a good thing he's the main character.
Well, my favorite character is not always the main character in everything, in a lot of things. You know what I mean? Like, a lot right. of times it is sort of the supporting character. You can have a great main character, and if you have shit supporting characters, it doesn't matter. It's going to, you know, it's going to be, it's going to read as flat.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really, can we talk about Tenzin's family? We touched on it earlier, but like, yeah.
There's a thing with Avatar Aang where they go into the fact that he might not have been the best parent.
Right.
And people hate it. It is like the Luke Skywalker thing in the sequel series. People are like, oh, so they hate Aang now, and they've ruined his legacy.
Right.
And really, all it is he favored Tenzin because Tenzin was the
Tenzin
hope
was an
for
airbender.
Airbenders. Right. Which makes sense. It might not have... He had his flaws. He's a human being.
Sure.
And they make it very clear he loved his other children, and they know that he loved him.
Right.
They're just mad that Tenzin has this superiority complex and thinks everything is about him, and he needs to let go of that.
It's, and Tenzin needs to let go of it, but he also needs to be aware of it, because I kind of get the sense that, like, he didn't understand how favored he was. Because he kept bringing up, like, remember when this happened? And they're like, no. You know, we right. didn't go do that stuff with Dad. Only you did. And I think it's really valid. And I think it's one of the best written sort of character points of Aang, who's not even in this. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
it's this great bit of character writing that sort of acknowledges, like, yes, he's a highly evolved spiritual being, but he's still a flawed human being and a flawed parent, and all parents are flawed. And
right.
all siblings have these weird... rivalry sounds like an aggressively bad word, but like, there is a
There's ups and downs.
I'm one of five siblings, you know what I mean?
One of three.
If you think we weren't counting Christmas presents every year, you know, and going, ooh, they got more than I did, or they got bigger stuff than, you know, like, somebody's favored here. It was right. It was just sort of like that. Most of that was in our heads, you know what I mean? But there's a natural sort of, I don't want to use the word rivalry, but I can't think of a better word.
Competition?
There is a weird vying for parents' attention that kids do. And sometimes that stuff gets carried into adulthood. I know people who have weird relationships with their siblings over things that happened when they were kids.
It's a bit sad.
A little bit, but we see it in this series.
Right.
And we see it with, like, Bumi, who isn't a bender and feels like he is constantly
making up these stories.
That he not only felt left out by his dad because he's not a bender, but he's trying to prove to his siblings that he's worthy, even though he's not a bender. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm going to climb down this cliff by myself. I don't need you guys. I don't need bending. And yes, he's always telling these stories that you're kind of going, well, this might technically be true, but he's embellishing a lot of thing, you know what
yeah,
I mean, like
yeah.
And there's, I think that leads to like one of the best jokes in the series when he actually does level the camp, the enemy camp.
Oh, that's funny.
And he does it in the weirdest way. And he's like, well, I had my flute. And he's like, eh, never mind. Like,
cause no one's going to believe this.
Tenzin just yelled at him to stop lying.
Right.
It's really, yeah, but like those dynamics I loved. I love that about this season. And I think when I would talk to you and go, I like this season better than one, it's that kind of stuff that was sticking out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, by the end of it, none of it mattered. But Tenzin and his family, I think, was really well written. And I think that is what I talk about when I say, I know they can do better than they do. For me, that's the most frustrating part.
Right.
Is knowing that they're capable of writing really compelling things.
I like to look at this show as two separate, I don't know, storylines or objectives.
Oh, for sure there's different
stories. Where it's,
yeah.
It's the rebuilding of the Air Nation with Tenzin and his family, and there's the next Avatar.
By the way,
Korra.
I think Tenzin is single-handedly trying to repopulate the Air Nation. Good God, man.
Yeah, he's doing a lot.
Get that guy some cable TV or something to, you know, curb whatever he's got going on there.
He imagine if he had multiple wives. He becomes a Mormon.
If they were like the old school Mormon society. Shout out to all our Mormon listeners.
Look, Pema, I've got to do it. My dad told me to. That. Ooh, what if Aang had other kids?
Aang could have, because he's representative of the four nations. He could have had a wife in each nation.
Let's see if Katara knows anything about that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Aang, player.
But yeah, I like that aspect of this season.
What else you got? I want you to drive this conversation. This is your...
Another thing here, this is a big positive for me, but I know it's not going to be for you, but I'm going to bring it up anyway.
Great.
Avatar 1.
Boring.
Shut up. For anyone who doesn't know my dad, he doesn't like prequels. He doesn't like building to lore. He does not...
Well, I do like building to lore. I like doing it in better ways than prequels.
Okay, well, I like it.
Okay.
That two-parter, I think, is the shining grace of this season. It's entertaining. The art style is incredible.
Art-wise, I will agree with you 100%. It was great to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Story fell a little flat for me. I don't care where the avatars came from. I don't even like that they were essentially made by manipulating nature. I would rather this was a naturally occurring phenomenon that people discovered. People discovered that they had this.
Right. I don't think many people were curious to know what made the Avatar.
Right. Like, there are Star Wars lore. Yes, I'm going to call back to Star Wars 1,000 times. Because,
we've been doing it this whole episode.
I mean, it's my go-to sort of, like, epic fantasy thing. Especially with, like, a lot of world building and a lot of characters and things like that. I think it's a good analog to put next to it. But, like, there's a lot of, like, there's, like, the extended universe stuff where they explain, like, oh, this is where the Jedi came from. This is where the Sith came from. And really, like, for people who want to get into that kind of thing, that's great. But if you don't, none of it really matters to the overall point of the story that the actual Star Wars original trilogy is trying to tell you. You know what I mean?
Right.
None of that matters. You know, they go in the prequels and they go, oh, midichlorians. And then it's just sort of like, yeah. Who cares? You're messing up, like, you're over-explaining something that doesn't need any explanation at all. And so, for me, that's what these flashback episodes represented, was like, we don't need any of this. I know you're trying to explain, I know they bring it back around, but they didn't need to. It could have just been the chain of avatars.
Right. And I think... Like, I agree that it's kind of pointless. And even my idea of the Avatar was just that everyone is reincarnated and the Avatar is just someone who can master all four elements, right, and is so special because it's this buildup of human knowledge, and now it has that added component of, oh, actually, the Avatar is a demigod.
But the Avatar is just, you're just the next incarnation of this god. This right. single being.
And I do agree that that kind of takes away, but if you just look at it, like, I look at it as a fairy tale.
Sure.
Sort of like this legend that has been passed on. Maybe it's a book somewhere in that library that the owl is guarding.
Hey, good callback, by the
right?
way.
Right?
Yeah.
But I find it entertaining, and I think it's the best part of this season, even though it's very loosely tied in and probably didn't need to be there.
I understand what they were trying to do, in that, you know, they had to show the spirit tree. They had to show, you know, Vatu was a big part of the bad guy plot. So they had to introduce that and put it in. Right. Oh, he's imprisoned in the tree and this and that. I get it. Iroh could have told her that story at the tea party. We didn't need a 2-episode flashback to the beginnings of the Avatar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just feel like that's one of my problems with this season, and where I think these good ideas got lost was that this series is too long. This season is too long.
It's like they're overthinking
it. Right. They sort of, it's that, you know, Marvel Netflix problem where they're like, have 13 episodes, and they're like, we only have content to fill 8. Well, let's pad this out for, you know, and it just becomes like, why are we doing this? You know, like, this, none of this needs to be in here to this extent. And, right. and it really dragged this season out to where by the end of it, I was super bored.
Okay. I think that's fair. What's weird is I'm more bored in the beginning of this season.
It takes a little bit to get going.
Yeah,
yeah,
I like the second half better.
Well, yeah. But I don't know. I think I was a little more invested at the beginning of the season because it, you know, like I said, it started out and they're like, okay, we're done with pro bending. I'm like, cool. And then
already good.
Already a plus. And then Tenzin on vacation. I'm like, this is weird, but okay. I didn't like how they came to it, like, Korra keeps doing this already. Like, we've seen this multiple times. Like, oh, I'm going to go train with this person. It's like, train with Tenzin. Tenzin right. is the guy you came here to train with originally. You already tried to go and train with somebody else once, and it didn't work out. Like, train with this guy. He knows what he's doing. He's the best guy to show you the spiritual shit because he's in it.
And she's like, nah.
And she's like, nah, I'm going to go with him. He's my uncle. He's very shady, but still, I think it'll be cool.
Korra really, this is the second time she's been deceived by a Northern Water Tribe politician with bad motives.
I'm telling you, Korra sucks. She thinks she's super smart, and she's super dumb, and she's super unqualified.
So is her detective boyfriend. But,
for sure. No, the core three are not, like, good characters. That's what I'm saying. This is my issue with this series. I don't enjoy these characters. I don't enjoy them in the way I enjoyed Katara, Sokka, Toph, and Aang. That, you know, if your core group's not likable, you're already have points against you.
They are likable. It just depends on the situation. And this season doesn't highlight what makes the characters great. It's like they invented the characters and then they forgot why they liked those characters. And they were like, okay, let's do this. And they just shifted everything.
I half agree with you. It's like they invented characters and that's it. No, it is. I feel like they go, well, Korra's going to have her posse. So, how about these two? Make one of them fat and dumb and the other one handsome and dumb. And this rich girl whose dad is a criminal and is actually probably one of the more interesting, potentially interesting characters on the show because of that.
She is an interesting character.
She is. I think she's the one who sort of gets the shaft the most. Like, she's actually struggling on a personal level more than almost anybody. Like,
right.
She's lost her father and still managed to hang on to her ethics and morality above this loyalty for her criminal father. She lost her boyfriend twice, you know, mm-hmm. like...
And in this season, she is trying to control a business, which she's never had to do.
Right.
And she's in over her head, and she's being taken advantage of. And they don't explore any right. of that.
She's kind of the most ethical character in this series.
Right.
She's the one who's not lying. She's the one who is constantly doing the right thing. And trying to, like you said, trying to take over her father's business, which was raised for unethical purposes, and repurpose it towards, you know, it's not often I'm going to feel bad or sympathy for a member of the military industrial complex, but frankly, like...
It's that Tony Stark in Iron Man 1.
Kind of, thing. Yeah. Like, you kind of see that she's trying to turn the tide of this company. Varric is the other...
Oh, like, he's the evil capitalist in this.
Yes, but not. They don't even commit to that. Because he goes to jail and then he's like, oh, take my ship to do the right thing. Like, it's like, just make him the comic relief bad guy. Like, that's all you had to do with him. And then they just are like, by the end of it, they were like, I can't stay mad at Varric. Come on, guys.
They realized he was the best thing they had going for him.
He was the funniest thing in this. I really did like
him. Zulie, do the thing.
When they're in the platypus bear costume and they're like, where's Zulie? And she's like, oh, I'm in here too.
She never leaves my side.
It's really a... I think he's the best comic relief this series has had so far.
Right.
And Boomy.
Boomy's pretty great.
I do, honestly, I legitimately like Boomy. And the dynamic of, I'm going to keep beating this drum because it really was like the high point of the
series. Please do. I need this to be a more positive, please. We need to see, if you decide from this season not to watch the rest, I will lose my mind, because that is the good part of this show.
No, look, I've already committed to watching this series, but I do have to honestly say, so far, I'm not enjoying it. If it wasn't for the show, I would not continue to watch this.
Okay.
I would just say, in the same way that I'm more or less, Mandalorian aside, though there, I do have some issues with Mandalorian, I'm done with Star Wars as well. Like, I just, new movies coming out, Obi-Wan movie, I don't care about any of it, really.
Right.
Like, all of it really comes back down to original trilogy for me. I've kind of cut myself off from almost the rest of the Star Wars universe. I'm like, this is what I love, this is what I grew up with, and for me, that's the core of it. And for this universe, the original Avatar series, same thing. That's it. Those three seasons are damn near perfect fantasy storytelling. This just feels like supplemental material that wasn't needed. I understand there's a fan base for it. And I understand why they made it. Because those Avatar fans grew up and this was like the age-appropriate sequel for them that they would still be into and get to explore that world. And if you are enjoying exploring that world... I'm not trying to take that away from you. I'm telling you, as a 45-year-old man visiting this for the first time, this is, I think, clearly not aimed at me, and I'm just not enjoying it. There are aspects to this. That's what I'm trying to come around to where I'm not being this giant curmudgeon about it and trying to ruin it for anybody else.
That's why this season is so disappointing, is it fails to live up to the potential that I know this show has. Like, it's so frustrating. I don't even know how they got the green light for 3 and 4, where they were able to live up to the potential, and I don't even know what else to say.
This
season, literally, the core of Korra's story in this season is that she is coming into her own, breaking ties with the past avatars and doing her own thing, And that is what the show is trying to do. And I think that's great, but they didn't do it. They did not commit to it.
That's the problem. Look, the idea of breaking ties with your past and the idea of legacy being your power and them breaking that off and her having to discover it on her own. I love that. I wish they had killed off the Avatar chain halfway through the season and had it be about her finding her way back from that instead of within the same episode, within the same 10 minutes, her just turning on her heel and going, it's in me now. It's the end of Wizard of Oz when they go, oh, you have the power all along. And she goes, oh, okay. Like, that's it. It's just like this ex machina fix to it. You know, like
imagine if losing the Avatar cycle was what had happened at the halfway point.
That's what I'm
instead
saying.
Instead of that flashback. And then.
That's what I'm saying.
It would have been so much better.
If this series had not been about her turning into a giant ghost and punching the other giant ghost. If this series had been about her working her way back to back to being the Avatar without her legacy and finding her way back, that's how in real life scenario, that's how you find your spiritual center, is you work through this low point in your life.
Right.
You don't just run into some misfortune and turn on your heel. And I'm not saying this has to be a one-to-one comparison to real life.
Right.
But I'm saying if you want to portray a spiritual journey, it has to take place over this period of time.
No one is depressed for a day and then magically gets better.
Yeah, that's called being sad. That's not depression.
Exactly.
Here's a different analog, a non-Star Wars analog I'll make.
Ooh.
Superman 2.
Okay.
Halfway through Superman 2, he renounces himself as Superman. He becomes mortal. He loses his powers.
Right.
So that he can be with Lois Lane. Spoiler alerts for the 40-year-old Superman 2.
Oh, wow.
And then he experiences being mortal. He gets his ass kicked. He loses everything, and the world falls victim to these Kryptonians, okay? He can't defeat on his own. He has to work his way back to the Fortress of Solitude to try, you know, he's at his lowest point, and he has to work his way back to get his powers. Like, and it is sort of like, that all takes place in a 2-hour movie, but it is shown as like about half the movie is him trying to find his way back to being, realizing what is important, what he is supposed to do.
Sure.
Without, you know, being selfish and wanting this relationship more than what his greater purpose is. It is about him reaching a low point and having to work his way back to it. And I feel like that is doing the work. This season did not do the work. And that was, if you remember, my season one critique was she lost her bending and then she didn't lose her bending. It was the same thing. It was the same heel turn. And I think I said that what I would have liked was for her to end season one without her bending powers and for season two to be about her finding her way back, you know, getting her spiritual education and through that finding her way back to getting her bending powers again.
I feel like they keep doing this structure. They do it in the first two series where they build up to this epic climax for like, it's like three episodes of intensity and then they wrap it up in like 3 seconds at the end.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, that's not how story structure works.
Exactly.
You didn't do that with Avatar.
Exactly.
Why are you doing
that? You do agree with me. Yes.
But I still like the show, and it gets better.
Okay. It's fair. There are good parts of the show. All right. You're right. I've graded on the show, and I don't want to take.
They learn from these mistakes, is what I'll say.
That's fine. I don't want to talk about season 3 and 4 yet.
That's all I want to talk about.
I want to talk about This season, because that's what we watch for this.
Okay.
There are positives to that. And I feel like this keeps getting lost. There are positives to this series.
Mm-hmm.
They're just so overshadowed by what they did poorly, I think.
Right. That's what I wanted this to be, is I wanted us to talk about the good stuff.
Well, we have talked about the good. We've hit every point on this positive list in our show doc.
But unfortunately, the negatives list is twice as long.
It is very long. Yes. I mean,
it's kind of the point here.
Yeah, I don't know what to say, because there's just sort of like, there's so many added characters, and some of them are fun, but overall, so many of them are pointless.
Right. If we could just have a season of cut out all of the characters, only have Tenzin's family and Korra and the main gang. That's it.
Are you describing series 3?
I'm not. I am not. I promise you I'm not.
Are you trying to low-key talk about season 3? You know what I would like is if Korra was to go to the Western Air Temple.
My favorite part about this was Zaheer, and you're like, what? Who is that? Let's wrap it up then, because I have nothing else to say.
I get it. Like, I think we've kind of said what we have to say about this. I'm a little hazy on this. I finished watching it like a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I didn't care about this to the point that none of it really, I didn't retain a lot about it. There was just so much going on in this, and so little of it mattered that it just didn't resonate with me. And I don't want that to be like everyone's experience.
I felt the same way though, the last few episodes of this series, I was like dreading sitting down to watch it. I was like, okay, I'll watch anything else. Anything.
No, I get it.
And that's why I hate this, is it kills
the momentum.
Right.
Yeah.
The whole show. It just sucks.
I get it. There's plenty of stuff I've had to watch that I knew I wasn't going to enjoy, and it just becomes a giant chore.
If this season was its own show, I would hate it less, simply for the fact that it's not ruining the things around it. It's just bad on its own, but this is, it kills everything around it.
There's plenty of Walking Dead fans that hate season 2 of Walking Dead. When they go to the farm and nothing happens for half the, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it doesn't have to ruin the entire show for you. Just like me not being into Korra doesn't ruin Avatar. Me not liking the Star Wars prequels doesn't ruin the original series for me. Like,
sure.
The things that you enjoy about any property, any franchise, you should be able to enjoy those on their own merit.
I will. It's just, this will be the last time I ever watch those episodes.
That's totally fair. Look, I mean,
I only watched it for this. That was it.
I get it.
The weird thing is, I don't even know how I made it through the first time. Like, I was just determined to watch all of Korra because I'd watched all of Avatar. And then I got to, like, the end, and I was like, that was so great. And then now I'm going through it again, and I'm like, it took so long to get there.
I watched Westworld season 3 as it was coming out. It's bad. It's just bad all the way through. And Westworld season 1, I really love. I still love that season on its own. 2, I was like, big slump. Maybe they'll bring it back with 3. And 3 was so bad that I look at it and I go, I don't know how I didn't quit halfway through this season.
Right.
But, you know, the first time you're watching something, you keep going, they can bring it back.
I'm holding out hope.
They can bring it to we've all seen or read books or seen movies or seen TV shows where it's a big drag, but if you make it to the end, it's worth it because the end is the big payoff that, you know, like they bring it home in such a way that you go, okay, worth the slog at the beginning.
Sure.
But, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. So you're holding out hope that by the time they get to the end, it's going to pay off.
And it doesn't.
In this case, it just didn't, you right. know.
I'll still have those Avatar 1 episodes.
You know, if that's your jam, go for it. For me, it was the Spirit World artwork in general, not just the flashback, which was a different art style, which I really enjoyed. But just the Spirit World, I think, looks psychedelic and crazy and weird and cool.
Right. They cross like crazy distances in like 2 seconds.
Right.
And all these creatures.
The general, yeah, the creatures, the look, the spirit tree looks all twisted and gnarly. But that in the Iroh cameo, really the high point, when the mad tea party with Uncle Iroh,
That episode is good on its own. It's a great scene,
and Korra being a little girl again, because spiritually that's what she felt like. It was very right. well written, representative of that.
She gets a better arc in that episode than the whole series.
Absolutely. That, I could not agree with that more. And I think that's the most positive thing we're going to agree on, besides the Tenzin family.
Right. But, let's list positives. Tenzin, Varric, those episodes, what else we got?
The visuals of like the battle scenes looked cool.
Okay.
I liked Boomy and his bullshit tales and
right.
and how he like enchants the spirit and ends up, you know, being the hero of the day. The twins had moments.
Twins?
Her cousins.
Oh, right, yeah.
There was moments where I found them funny. There were moments where I found them threatening. There were moments where I found them neither. They were very inconsistently written.
Yeah.
April
from...
Aubrey Plaza's, like, perfectly cast as that. Yeah, but, I mean, honestly, that's a short list, but that's really what it is with me. I mean,
right.
The rest of the season was... absolute throwaway, and I think just really lazy storytelling from people who are capable of telling better stories.
I think that's about right.
I don't want to trash talk the writers because I think they showed that they were very capable.
Yeah.
But they just didn't do it. They just didn't do the work, honestly.
Maybe something was going on in their personal life. I keep looking for a reason to explain it.
Sometimes there's studio notes, sometimes there's any other reason, and sometimes there are people who are just collecting a paycheck and just putting it through its paces. I don't know.
It's a weird fluke.
And I write a little bit. I tell stories a little bit. Sometimes what you have great ideas, and when you go to execute them, it just doesn't come together the way you thought it would.
I mean, there are good ideas in this.
There's great. That's what I'm saying.
The spirit world and unifying and the good and the dark spirit and this big... It's like an epic tale, but then they just forgot
it's
to
like
tell
an
it.
Epic tale told by small-minded people.
Right.
I don't know. That maybe that's too shit talky, but
they've earned it, okay?
I did not care for this. But that's should we leave it there?
Let's do it, please.
Okay.
Let's throw it away.
We are going to be back with season 3 and then season 4.
Yes.
We are going to round this out. But yeah, we're going to pause and get back to movies in a little bit. Let's do some shout outs first. Austin, what do you got?
Let's do it. I have a YouTube channel. It's called Hello Future Me.
Okay.
I don't know his name, the guy who runs the channel, but he's... If you click on it, if you search him up, you'll find him. He's a writer, he's a video essayist, and I'm shouting him out now because he talks a lot about world building and Avatar in specifically. That is like his main thing, is he always goes back to Avatar. He has like these 20-minute videos on the history of like the Fire Nation and why they did certain things in the story and the world building and how it works together. And he really analyzes it in a way that makes sense and it's coherent. And I feel like even if you're not a writer, you'll be able to understand, and it helps you better look at stories.
That's really cool, because I have kind of a complicated relationship with world building. Like, I think world building is cool. I think it fleshes out everything in a story. I think it makes everything kind of come home a little bit more. But I think there is a fine line to walk, because I think people, authors and writers, showrunners, get a little too into world building. And then the thing becomes just about the world building. And characters and story come second. And they just become vehicles for more world building.
At that point, you're not an author. You're running a D&D
campaign. You're a dungeon master. Right. Like, it just all... It gets very tiring to read. I know there's a lot of readers. That's their jam. And that's what they want to... And, hey,
there's
good on
you. There's a niche for it.
But that's not storytelling. That's just... like, if that's what you're into, like, just publish your Bible. Your story Bible.
Right.
As a companion piece, because that's all those people want to read. But yeah, I am convinced there's a generation of D&D players who grew up to become authors, and that's what their books are, is the world building aspect. Not bagging on D&D or any of that, but that's not books either, you know.
Right. Like, I don't think this guy is that, though.
I think world building is great, and I think it can really add to the storytelling.
Right.
But it has to be the spice to the storytelling, not the main thing, you know.
Sure.
In my opinion.
Everyone has their own taste. What's your shout out?
My shout out is my buddies over at the Pop-Up Filmcast. That is Keith and Derek. They run your soon-to-be, if not already, favorite movie podcast. They're not throwing shade on us. It's just what that show is. It really is a fun show. I've been a guest on it. They review movies that you may have missed that come from a mysterious box that was left on Keith's doorstep. And we just... go over them, we watch them, and talk about them. In reality, they're movies that don't really exist in the real world. They are fake movies that everybody brings their own made-up plot to, and then we talk about it as though it's an actual movie.
I think it's such a creative idea.
It's such a great idea for a show, and as a guest, it's super fun to do, because it's a great creative exercise, and sort of a weird... kind of improv game.
Right. Every episode I've listened to of that podcast is like totally different.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they do different genres.
It depends on the guest. Yeah.
There's one from a little, God, at least a year ago, where it's like ABC after school specials that you may have missed. we did one about robots when I was on there. But anyway, that's Keith Gala and Derek Glasscock, and their show, they're both really, really funny guys, and their show is just so unique and creative, and it's unlike, I really think it's unlike any other movie podcast, and sort of cracking a code on doing improv as a podcast. It's really hard to do. I think a lot of people trying to do like Zoom shows comedy wise, you know, without an audience, without laughter, without feedback, to do this improv as a discussion, sort of performing for each other and participating in each other's
And it's improv without visuals. It's just audio.
It's just basically explaining. It's a really unique form of improv that I think cracks a code on doing it for a podcast form. And I really want to shout it out because I think it's so unique and fun that more people need to be listening to it. So that is the Pop-Up Filmcast, and that is a member of the Podfix Podcast Network. A lot of good shows on that network. I'm not going to get into all that, but they're a network worth checking out with just a lot of shows that are just purely fun. Fun, good, entertaining, independent podcasts. So please check that out. We got links for both of these in our show notes. So go ahead and click on those and check those out. We want to thank you for listening to this episode of The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rood. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It really helps our visibility and it helps us grow the show.
That's right. And another way to help us grow is to tell a friend or tell a cat, empty mailbox, anything you can find. Tell them about us.
I would say tell anyone who is capable. You can tell your mailbox if your mailbox is capable of hitting the download button.
Right, yeah.
Or leaving us a review.
I mean, dogs might be able to navigate Spotify.
Oh, for sure.
Right, yeah.
Spotify. I mean, like, come on.
Exactly.
It's a dog.
Yeah. So tell a friend about us.
Or a mailbox or a dog.
Right.
Austin, you have got the wheel next week. What are we going to watch?
It's a good one. I don't know. We're back to movies next week.
Yes, we are.
I chose Emma to watch. It's an adaptation of a book by...
It's a Jane Austen book, right?
Jane Austen, yep. I have not read the book. I have not seen the movie. I saw the trailer. Very promising. It looked funny. And I haven't heard anyone talk about it.
Gwyneth Paltrow, right?
Yeah. It's a 2020 movie, so...
No, it's not.
No, it's not?
No. It's a 20-year-old movie.
No.
Oh, then that's not the Gwyneth Paltrow one.
No, there's a new one.
Is there?
Yeah.
All right. Emma... Gwyneth Paltrow was in Emma... God, years ago.
It's Emma with a period at the end in the title.
Oh, okay.
And it's a 2020 remake based on the book of the same name.
Okay, yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow was in this in 96, but they've updated it again. Well, yeah, I mean, Jane Austen is one of those authors that it's not a remake of the movie. It's another adaptation of this Jane Austen movie. Like, Little Women gets made, like, every 20 years.
There's so many.
I'm not knocking that. I mean, classic literature is a great go-to, and everybody has a different interpretation of a book. And, you know, different actors want to... It's almost like a long-running stage play has different people come in and work on it, has different directors come work on it, has different... The cast changes in and out, like it's almost just a thing that in another 20 years Emma will be made again.
And I think it's also a thing of like keeping up with modern interpretations of things.
Sure.
Like regular Shakespeare is so hard to understand for some people. Because, like, they just can't connect with it.
I'm one of those people. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. So modern retellings of stories like this and for modern audiences.
And other more experiment. There's also, like, in terms of Shakespeare, there's kind of experimental retellings of it. Have you ever heard of the one with Leonardo DiCaprio, the Romeo and Juliet?
No.
Nomeo
and Juliet?
No,
it's very experimental.
Yeah, that actually was. But it was a sort of modern, it takes place modern day or modern to when it was made. It's sort of like rival gangs, like West Side Story.
Right.
But
I think I have
like
heard
more
of
in
it.
The 90s, but they speak Shakespearean. Like it's like a direct, not even a translation of Shakespearean language. It is that.
But it's it's visually a modern day piece.
Everything takes place modern day. It's gun violence. It's all of these things.
That is interesting.
It is very interesting. I saw it at the time. I saw it in a theater. I didn't like it just because I can't do the Shakespearean language thing, especially at the time. I've not tried in a long time.
Right.
But I could never get my head around it. And I'm one of those people who just... maybe I've never seen it done well or seen it been mature enough for it when I was trying it. But there's no denying that it's super interesting to interpret that way. I don't know how that's aged. I don't know if people are laughing at that now, at what an attempt it was. But it was very interesting and experimental at the time.
Experimenting is fun.
I think so.
You get unique results like that.
The way I see a lot of things, and we've talked about it a few times on this show, even if it doesn't work, if you take a big swing and miss, you at least took a swing. And I will respect you for that. Right. Even if I hate how it comes out.
It's still worth taking a swing.
It takes balls to take a swing that big. And, you know, respect to you for that. So,
right. So
there's some artistic integrity in that. But we will take a look at Emma, period.
Next week.
I'll see. I'm not really a Jane Austen guy either.
I'm pretty
unfamiliar with all of it, but
I've read a few short stories by her. She's led a pretty interesting life.
I'm interested in getting into this. So cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Good pick. That's gonna do it. I already read that part, never mind. that's staying in because I'm not editing this week. Austin, you want to read the credits?
Yep. We did everything ourselves, just like always.
Well, that's going to do it for... Oh, wait, no. There you have it. We'll see you next time on the picture show.
Hopefully we're more organized next time.
I'm on autopilot today. Sorry, guys.
See ya.